Welcome, everyone. I've got the pleasure of introducing Jesse Glick from CloudBees, who's going to bring more groovy to our session, our groovy track today. Yeah. Thanks, Jesse. Over to you.
All right. Thank you. So my name is Jesse Glick. I work at CloudBees, which is the company that's primarily behind the Jenkins continuous integration, continuous delivery deployment server. And what I primarily work on in Jenkins is a feature that we call pipeline. So I'll give some examples of what pipeline is and how it differs from other ways of using Jenkins. And my particular interest today is talking about the way in which we're using Apache Groovy as the basis for pipeline. And I think this is a rather unusual usage of Groovy. It's definitely going to be something different from what you've heard about in the past few sessions here in terms of being a much more specific domain that it's working in. So if you're familiar with Jenkins, you would know that there are different kinds of ways that you can define Jenkins projects, which is a way of setting up what build steps you want to run as part of your project and defining things like what test results you want to collect, how you want to present the results to people who have, who are browsing the status of this project after they've committed changes to source control and so on. The most visible difference in pipeline compared to previous iterations of what we call project types is that in the case of pipeline, we're talking about a script, which is written in what I'll call a dialect of Groovy. And this script gives an explicit series of steps for what you want Jenkins to do with your source code. So instead of having a GUI control that points to a particular source code location and a series of checkboxes for which kinds of warning results you want to collect and so on, anything that you might want to do with it becomes a series of commands inside Groovy. So here's an example of a very simple pipeline that has three stages for building, testing, and deploying, in this case, a Maven-based application. You can see that we're explicitly asking for a particular node, which is Jenkins terminology, for a place where you can perform computations. So usually it's a remote agent on some sort of build server that you have. And we call out different stages of the pipeline that we want to run, and we can give them names. And within each stage, we can do things like run particular shell scripts or do other things like this. Slightly more complex example where we're starting to see little bits of Groovy shining through the declarative style is that here we're going through two stages, one in which we use a plugin that's integrated with pipeline to help you build and test Docker images. So here we're building a Docker image from sources, from a Docker file and other descriptions. And then in a second stage, we're starting up the image in a fresh container temporarily and then running a self-test script inside it. There are various kinds of visualizations that are shown. This is not, the details of this visualization are not configured in the UI or really configured anywhere in Jenkins. Jenkins will just watch which stages your script actually runs when it runs, and it will display those stages automatically. This is another visualization. This is an experimental UI for Jenkins known as Blue Ocean, which is designed from the ground up to be able to run pipeline-based projects. So I'd like to go into sort of the basis of pipeline and how we decided to build it the way we did. So there were a number of different plugins and core features in Jenkins already, which exposed Groovy as sort of the de facto scripting language for the Jenkins ecosystem. So a lot of expert Jenkins users were already familiar with using Groovy to script various aspects of it. For example, there was a Groovy post-build plugin that let you run a short little Groovy script at the end of a regular project that would do various things like attach badges with extra information and URLs and things like that to your build. So we wanted to sort of follow in the same footsteps of that. And Groovy was certainly attractive in that we could run it inside the Java virtual machine. So we could take advantage of a rich set of Jenkins internal APIs. But we also needed to be able to decide which of those APIs should be available to particular uses. So there's the complex security model here that I'll get into. Compared to other things that would be what I would call sort of general purpose Groovy programs, a pipeline script is very specific about the domain it's working in. So it's primarily dealing with Jenkins-specific concepts, nodes, workspaces, files in the workspace, publishing results, asking for input, and things like that. So we wanted to have some sort of domain-specific language that would allow people to go beyond the sort of simplistic style of a traditional project configured from the GUI. So among the interesting ideas that we had for what this should do, one of the things that came up was that we were hearing from a lot of big Jenkins users that they're running very long builds or things that would sort of act across sometimes multiple days, and that they might be doing a 40-hour compilation and then you know a 24-hour soak test of things, and there might be multiple points in which human input was required or input from an external system. And during those times, it can happen that Jenkins crashes, or you simply want to restart it to update some plugins or to apply operating system patches or things like that. And so we wondered whether it was possible for a Jenkins job to continue running after all of this happens. So a traditional Jenkins project, if you shut down Jenkins, the job just stops right there. And we wanted to see if we could fix that limitation. So I'll skip over this and just sort of mention things that existed before. As it happens, the first two of these were also implemented in Groovy. JobDSL plugin continues to be a very popular plugin in Jenkins. This is focused on creating a set of projects from some external information. So it doesn't affect how each project runs, but it lets you do something like, say, look at my Subversion server, for example, and look for every project underneath a given root. If you find anything that matches a certain name pattern, then automatically create a job for it. On the more runtime side, there was something called a build flow plugin that had a Groovy DSL. So it was a little Groovy script that you'd run inside Jenkins. And most of what it would do would be to, say, build this other Jenkins project. So you'd have one controller script and then a bunch of little Jenkins projects that implemented particular pieces, and the build flow would sort of script all of these. And this was sort of the direct inspiration for Pipeline in some ways, including some of its limitations. So I'd like to jump, by the way, if you have questions, please interrupt, and I can also switch to a demo of some of these things running if you'd like to see it concretely. Yep.
I'm kind of curious, what you'll have, like, as good a
So the question was whether there's a particular preference for Maven over Gradle builds in terms of looking at the documentation for this and so on. No, that probably just reflects the bias of the people writing the documentation in terms of what examples were familiar. But really, this is not a replacement for the build tool. It's more a way of orchestrating where the build tool should run, what environment it should run in, and how the reports are collected and are collected and sent back to the user. So what you actually run for your build tool, that's going to, in general, be some sort of external process that has all of the meat of the project. And that's pretty much independent of pipeline. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, if you're doing some kind of cross-platform builds, whether there's a particular preference for using something like Python, or you could say the same about Ruby or many other things, for getting platform independence of those builds. And yeah, that would make sense. So in these simple examples, I'm just assuming a Unix, Linux environment. There is a bat step that runs on Windows, and there are various ways you can also have platform independent steps that run and so on. But definitely for anything that is just part of your build and can run on an external process, we sort of treat that as a black box. So if you like to drive that all through Python or something, that makes sense. All right, so the key problem when defining this, and the reason that, one of the two reasons why this winds up looking pretty different from a regular Groovy script that you might encounter, is that we were trying to support resuming of the builds after a restart of Jenkins. And basically, we want the build to resume where it left off. So I can, not sure if I have it set up. Yeah, so in this case, I have a build which has gone through several stages. It's gone through a stage where it's been compiled and passed unit tests, and then it's gone through a stage where it's gone through parallel testing on a couple of different machines to perform some kind of sanity checks. And finally, at this point, it's asking you that it's deployed a copy of the application to a staging server, and it's asking a human whether it should proceed with further deployment. So at this point, the build is run for a little while, but this might have finished at 7 o'clock at night, and the human is not around to approve or deny this request. And the Jenkins administrator decides to restart Jenkins at this point. So Jenkins is going to restart. We start up a fresh Java virtual machine. And now it's back up and running. And then we go back into our build, and if you take a look at the textual console, you get a little bit more detail here. So it's already gone through most of the builds, and it's in the middle of a program. And then it just prints this one line message that says it resumed after a restart. If you look at this, we call a thread dump, we can see that it's in the middle of some Groovy methods, and it's partway through executing the build, and right now it's paused at this input step. So this is a sort of a built-in function that's provided by one of the Jenkins plugins for pipeline that pauses the program until a human says to proceed or abort. So if we proceed, then it continues, and now it's off doing something else. It's acquiring a new build agent to start to run a deployment process. And this should go ahead and finish running a deployment. So the idea behind making this work is that unlike the regular Groovy runtime, which would basically a script that you run would run inside one Java thread in the Java virtual machine directly as bytecode, that's not going to work if the whole virtual machine restarts in the middle of it. So the trick for making a program work, be frozen to disk and then be dethawed and restored, is something called continuation passing style. So this is one of the few cases in my professional life where something from computer science classes actually applied to what I was doing. So this is a little bit complicated how it works, but I'll give a flavor of what kind of thing happens when we're doing this. So the key thing is that the Groovy compiler has something called a compilation customizer. I think you touched on this maybe in your morning session very briefly, that there is a way that you can customize what the compiler does when it's processing your source code. And at the top, we have a snippet of a compilation customizer from pipeline. And what this is handling is whenever the compiler is dealing with, I think the informal name is the Elvis operator. So this means evaluate this X on the left. And if that turns out to be a true value or non-empty list or something like that, then you return it right away. And if it turns out to be false or null or something like this, then you go and evaluate Y. So it's sort of like a variant of an if statement. So the way that the compilation customizer works is it inserts this little hook to call this helper method into your program. So instead of having your program compile to something that actually runs X and then actually tests its value and then actually runs Y, it instead basically calls this function, which creates a set of continuations. And basically, a continuation is a way of telling Jenkins is going to be running through your program step by step, like basically one line or even one expression at a time. And it's telling it, when you want to compile this, please, let me see if I can get this straight. Every time I read it, I have to remember again how it works. But please first run the code for X, which could be some expression. And then when you're finished with that, let me know and jump to this point. And when you jump to this point, it says, okay, what did I get for X? If it's true, then return that up as the value of my expression. And if it's false, then continue with this other expression on the right side, the Y. And whenever you're done with that, then proceed to where you're going. So basically every operation, every piece of syntax in the Groovy language is rewritten using something like this so that it can run in a special mode.
Yep.
Yeah, so the question is whether the idea was to resume after a failure of the compilation. No, the compilation always runs at the beginning of the build, and that's just a one-time process. So we're just putting some hooks into it that replace what the standard Groovy compiler would do. The idea is that at runtime, when you're running the build, we can go back to a particular pipeline script that I was running. So in this case, Jenkins resumed while I was inside this statement. So when I entered this special statement, which is sort of built into pipeline, Jenkins recorded, it saved to disk all of the information about what was going on. So it saved the fact that there were these variables, it saved the fact that we're inside this function taking a closure, it saved the fact that we're inside this function taking a closure, and any other kinds of local variables, anything like that. Yeah, so the whole state of the pipeline, when we come back from disk, it's still waiting for user input. If you say proceed as I did, then that basically returns null from this statement. And once you return null, then it continues running the program where it left off. Yeah, so everything about the program is just resumed exactly where you left off, where it was. So Jenkins is effectively running an interpreter, a special interpreter of Groovy that sort of saves the program counter and the local variables and the stack and everything like that. That's how it works out. So as part of that, that means that everything that the program does has to be something that Jenkins can save to disk so that it can resume it later. So in particular, this means that all of the local variables need to be serializable. So this is the Java interface for things that you can safely save to disk. And we're actually using a special version of serialization that comes from the JBoss project, which is called JBoss Marshalling River. So I'm not sure actually what JBoss is using it for exactly, but it's a customized version of Java serialization that lets us do additional tricks that you can't do easily or at all in the standard Java platform version. But otherwise, the concept is very similar. You'll notice in this that we're declaring a serial version in all of these. That means that all of these classes here are things that can be saved to disk. So we're keeping all of this information on disk. And here's just another example of a somewhat more complicated pipeline they have in another demo, which you can actually get as a Docker image and run. This demo runs, again, it's using a Maven project for concreteness, but it's running a Maven project with a bunch of expensive tests. And after the first build, it uses this special Jenkins plugin to figure out which tests were run the last time and divide them all into equal buckets so that they each take about the same amount of time. And then we split it across different build nodes. So each time you, so when you run the second build of this project, it's going to spin up 5 computers simultaneously. So you could get it from, you know, 5 machines on Amazon or something like that. And each one of them will run 20% of your tests. So if you restart Jenkins while it's in the middle of running these tests, you know, say 10 minutes through each of them, then it should come back up, still running those same Maven commands on the same computers in 5 different threads at the same time, which would be inside this run method, which is calling into this closure that you've provided. And then once those Maven commands finish, then each of these branches will continue on, collect the JUnit results, and finish the build. So I talked about it running 5 different threads in parallel. Actually, it's only running at most 1 Java virtual machine thread at a given time. So it's using what we call cooperative multitasking. So basically, there's one thread in Jenkins that's devoted to just running any Groovy code from your build, which you normally assume is just a tiny amount. You know, it should be a few milliseconds worth of actual Groovy code, because this is just the glue. And while you're not doing anything in the program, for example, while you're inside an input step waiting for some person to come back from vacation, or while you're running a shell step that's doing a 40-hour, you know, a batch step running a 40-hour Visual C++ compilation or whatever it is, the Groovy program isn't doing anything at all, and so that Java thread actually just goes idle and maybe gets recycled. All of this Groovy code runs inside the Jenkins master, so it's not being farmed out to other machines. Again, it's supposed to just be lightweight control code. And when you run one of these node blocks, that just says, hey Jenkins, please make a connection to some remote computer. And as soon as you have a connection that's up and live, so you might have to wait in queue for a while because maybe you only have a fixed set of computers, they're all busy. So it might just wait for half an hour until it gets a free slot on one of these computers. And then it starts running the contents of your block. So in this case, this is sort of a version of Node. It also runs a Node. So it may just wait here for half an hour until it has a connection to another machine. And then when it starts running, any shell steps that you do, automatically, it has enough context that knows, instead of running that locally on the Jenkins server, make a connection to the remote machine and tell it, please launch this process and tell me what happens with it. Yep. Yes, so the question is why is it using cooperative multitasking? And the reason is just that it's simpler to manage the state of the Groovy, they call it the Groovy virtual machine. It's much easier to manage its state when you just have a single thread. You don't have to worry about contention issues or anything like that. So there's no thread safety issues, whatever. You know, if you need to do anything that lasts for more than a second or so, you should be running an external process on a build server somewhere. So. And here's another example of a virtual thread dump, we call it, which is, so unlike a thread dump that you would get from something like JStack in the Java virtual machine, JStack is going to give you the actual Java threads, which map down to operating system level stack, with function calls being entered and exited. There's nothing like that in the case of pipeline that's really just going through an interpreter loop. But we can reconstruct what Groovy methods called different things in which order in terms of which continuations we were running. So you can see we have, somewhere the workflow script. This is the top level script that you passed for the job definition. And then we have some libraries that we've defined where we've packaged up some common functionality into Groovy files we keep in a separate repository. So you can see where we're stepping through that. And in the case of built-in pipeline functions like the shell step, in the thread dump, we give you extra information about what actually is happening with the shell step. In this case, we know it's running on this computer and it's running process ID 7. And here's a directory where we're basically tailing the log file of that process, looking for fresh output. So you get a picture of what kinds of things it's doing. But this is a synthetic stack trace, so it's not using the the built-in Java methods of getting stack traces. So I mentioned that the pipeline scripts differ from sort of regular Groovy scripts in the wild in two ways. The biggest was the use of the continuation passing style and the special interpreter. Another major change that we made was that Jenkins is a general purpose server that can have different user accounts with different levels of access to the system. And in general, we only would want Jenkins administrators to be permitted to make any kind of method call. Because if you can make any kind of method call inside the system, then you can do whatever you want to Jenkins. You can, you know, just look up your user account and make them admin or something like that. So we have to have some sort of control on what, on which scripts are allowed to call what things. So the way that we do this is with another compilation customizer, that typically we're running both of them on the same compilation. We call this the Groovy Sandbox. So my wife heard that I was traveling off to a conference, and she was excited to hear that I was playing in the Groovy Sandbox again. So it's a fun name for it, but this is a system that we use actually for different kinds of Groovy-based plugins in Jenkins, anything that might need some kind of security checks. And so essentially every time we call any kind of method or constructor or field from a Groovy script, we have a little hook that first does an access control check, and it just looks up that method call, for example, in a list to see, is this on an approved list of methods you're supposed to be able to call? If it's not, then it just throws a security exception and the script stops. So we have a particular whitelist that has a bunch of the Groovy GDK and a bunch of Java methods and some other things. There's also, but there are various ways of defining which Groovy sources get passed through this and which don't. So if you have a Groovy library that you set up as an administrator, then that gets a free pass. That can do anything that you want. So you can have a library which sort of looks up internal Jenkins APIs, does some calculations, and then provides a safe version of that for users to call into. So we saw some particular steps being run. So these were what we call a step is sort of a primitive function that's provided by a Jenkins plugin. Here's one to download a tool. Here's one to run a shell script. Here's one to grab a node. Here's one to run some things in parallel. Here's one to check out sources. So all of these steps are things that can be added by other Jenkins plugins. So there's a what we call an extension point in Jenkins for letting a plugin add new kinds of features to the system. And for pipeline, the most important extension point is just called step. And you can define a step that takes any kind of parameters you want, and it can have different kinds of structures and lists and things like that, and it can take closures as well. So we saw, I think in a previous slide, let's see if the, yeah, so in this one, for example, this split test step that's defined by a plugin dedicated to splitting up tests for you takes a few different parameters, including this parallelism mode, which you can set to be using different modes either by maximum amount of time or by maximum count of branches. So you defined it to use a count of 5. So all of these things are are kinds of structures that you can define in the plugin. Actually, skip ahead to a screenshot of that. You can see a list of steps that get provided, and then if you click the magic help button, it basically generates a little groovy statement that uses that step in a prototypical way with some fixed values. So you can define some configuration settings here. And these things have drop downs and so on. So you can, I can show a example of it here live. If you look at just a simple step would be if you wanted to read a file called config.txt and you click generate pipeline script, then it gives you valid Groovy for configuring that. And this kind of configuration form uses the same infrastructure as all other Jenkins GUI configuration. So a lot of plugins actually share bits of configuration between traditional plugins and pipeline using the system. And there's a standard way of mapping the configuration into something you can use from the DSL. I also mentioned that it's possible to use libraries, so you can define reusable pieces of configuration in a separate repository and then import them, so you get access to sort of all of the different features of Groovy. Here's an example in this demo where I have this servers.groovy is coming from a library in a separate repository, and it's sort of defining some generic functionality for doing deployment. I mean, this is a sample that's just running on localhost, so it's not doing anything very interesting. But you can use the syntax, which is directly inspired by Groovy Grape. So whereas in a regular Groovy script, you'd say at grab some library out of Maven Central, here you ask to at library something from a list of libraries that are configured in Jenkins, and you can begin to use those. So these are libraries containing pipeline script, basically. Your library itself, if it's a trusted library, it can also itself use Grape. So the library code can load in other kinds of libraries from wherever you like to do more advanced things, like you can use semantic versioning or anything you can think of. They sort of showed an example of documentation being generated from different plugins. I have a few minutes left. I just wanted to talk about the things that came up as we were implementing it and how Groovy worked out for these purposes. So definitely the big pluses were that you can easily call into Java API, so it makes it very easy to do things like have pipeline libraries that integrate deeply with other parts of Jenkins. And we make pretty heavy usage of Groovy's ability to define DSLs, so we can provide a very simplified syntax, so you can have a quite short pipeline script. And of course, the compilation customizer facility is what enables us to build all these features. The problems come when you're trying to use particular parts of Groovy that are not, obviously Groovy was never designed with doing this kind of resumable program in mind. That wasn't a use case. So it's a little bit forced, and we have various points where things don't work the way they should. We're still trying to find some ways of replacing some of these methods with versions that do work, that are safe to resume. But this is definitely a work in progress. I mean, basically, there's a large set of language features in Groovy. Sometimes don't know all of them until somebody reports a bug about it. And so trying to support all of these is a significant amount of maintenance burden. In terms of the runtime implementation, again, our main issues revolve around the fact that we're sort of running an interpreter and recompiling scripts frequently because the script can change from build to build and so on. In particular, Groovies has a bunch of caches which were written under the assumption that your script would rarely change. You just sort of start up a program and that would have your script and it would just go off and run for a long time. But it turns out if you create a lot of class loaders with new Groovy environments over and over and over, that it does a bad job of letting go of all of the memory for those. So we've spent some time trying to do workarounds with where we basically just chop off any pieces of memory which we know are not going to be used. One thing that's under progress by Andrew Baer, who unfortunately couldn't make it to this conference, he is pretty active in Apache, is that he's working on a variant syntax for pipeline, which covers what I guess would be the 90% case where you don't need to run any kind of complicated control flow, if statements and loops and things like that, where you have mostly just a strict list of steps, but you still want to have the advantages of having the definition of those steps be in source control and so on. And this does still allow you to insert bits of unrestricted Groovy wherever you want to as sort of a intermediate step in any of these stages. But the rest of the structure is something that can be parsed and recreated by a GUI editor. So you can use this Groovy DSL as a representation of something that can also be round-tripped by a visual editor. Yeah, and that was some discussion about the Groovy internals I talked about. Question? Yep.
Mm-hmm. With the Jenkins file. Mm-hmm. And I read on the internet that it's possible to sort of have the Jenkins instance create some sort of file that I can import into IntelliJ to get some sort of mm-hmm. content assist or something. But I never managed to do that. So.
Yeah, that's definitely a work in progress. So the question was about creating I think it's GDSL for IntelliJ and DSLD for Eclipse. Did I get that right? Yes. Basically, IDE-specific helpers for pipeline script. We do export some GDSL today, but we definitely consider it a work in progress, so it only covers sort of the very basics of it. Definitely, that needs to be improved quite a bit and expanded also to DSLD for Eclipse users. The idea with that would be that you could go to a particular Jenkins installation that has some particular set of plugins, and each of the steps that these plugins provide has some set of options that you know that may be expanded from release to release. And in addition to sort of the static reference that you get as HTML, that you can also export it in a format that you could then dump into an IDE and load up for code completion purposes. But I don't actually use either of those IDEs right now, so I don't know too much about the details of this.
But.
On builds.apache.org. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to see if there's a particular pipeline job that's available.
I can tell you one.
Yeah. I mean, there's it is there. Again, I don't know how well it works. I think for in a number of cases, it's sort of not giving very rich type information, as you can see. So it's not doing as much. It's not constraining the types of objects as well as it should, and I think it's not currently handling nested structures. So this is definitely up for improvements.
Hey, so
questions?
Number one, hey, thanks for the great talk. I really like this whole pipeline thing you guys are doing. As I move to a containerized world, in terms of the Docker plugin and products like Cucumber, do you have any guidance about someone who's getting started in that space? You know, what products I should look at to do that, automate the whole workflow through pipeline? And thank you.
Yep. Well, I guess it's a pretty broad question. I might not be the best person to advise you on all aspects of that, but I can say that in terms of using these things from pipeline, there are sort of three levels of usage. So the very rudimentary level is that there's no Jenkins feature specifically for it, but any kind of tool that you want to call, you can call. And if you need to do something like publish reports or generate in a custom HTML format, you'd probably use something like the HTML report plugin, where it just gives you a generic upload of some report page. And your next level of integration would be plugins that have specifically been updated to support pipeline, so they do the same kind of things that they did for traditional jobs, but in a pipeline-compatible way, but with essentially the same semantics. And then there are some plugins that have fresh features that are written specifically for pipeline usage. In some cases, those add their own DSLs. So in the case of Docker in particular, there's a plugin that introduces a new sub-DSL in Groovy that's specifically for working with Docker images and containers and things like that. There's another one for Artifactory, et cetera.
And any other questions? No, let's thank Jesse once again for his very informative talk. Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you.